Football Friday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. 98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station.
Tyler 7-9 passing to start the game. 4.5 to play in the first quarter. Now he's going to pull it, tucks it, and runs it up the middle. Into Colts territory at the 45-40. He's free at the 30. Can he house it at the 10-5? Tackled by the ankles at the 2-yard line. Tyler hits the nitrous and nearly takes that the length of the field.
Paul Calvisi on the call from Christmas Day. Kyler Murray's longest run as a pro quarterback, 57 yards in that loss to the Colts on Christmas Day. But one of the highlights of Kyler Murray's season, of which there were plenty, as we hit the 7 o'clock hour here on this Football Friday. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Why are we playing that Kyler Murray highlight? Because in reaction to azcardinals.com, announcing their 2021 Cardinals Awards. I like the way they did this, Bick. They had a very big panel, 27 different people casting ballots in different areas. Most Valuable Cardinal, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Newcomer of the Year, Play of the Year, and Beyond the Box Score Player are the categories. And Kyler Murray was named the Most Valuable Cardinal by the panel. Not unanimously, but he was named.
Wow. Okay.
Is that who you would have voted for?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was an MVP candidate for a good portion of that season.
Yeah, I mean.
Granted, he missed three games and wasn't all that great on the way out, but I still think only James Conner would approach him, in my opinion. But they've got a separate award for offensive player of the year, which I'm sure James Conner
dominated the voting there. You know, does the offensive excellence and the number of touchdowns, 18 touchdowns, does that bleed over into most valuable territory? For some, it did. There was an array of players who got votes for most valuable Cardinal. And again,
as Andrew Wiggins didn't get any votes, we're good.
That Golden State Warriors didn't infiltrate this voting process, have you know.
Right.
Here's the players that got votes from the panel. Kyler Murray won it, most valuable Cardinal. James Conner, yes. Rodney Hudson.
Okay.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can make an interesting case, although he had his worst statistical year as a pro, and a lot of that was influenced by being injured on two different occasions and missing a lot of time. But it was value proven by absence.
Right.
Which we've seen plenty of times. And it was definitely true with DeAndre Hopkins. J.J. Watt got a few votes. Buda Baker. He got one vote. That was all for most valuable Cardinal. Mentioned James Conner, offensive player of the year. I don't have any problem with that, do you?
No, none whatsoever. You could go that route and say DeAndre Hopkins, but that's just a nice thing to say. You can't give people awards because they've been absent, even if their absence creates a huge void that nobody can fill.
Uh-huh. You can't.
Right?
Oh, right. Sorry, I was setting you up for, because didn't J.J. Watt get... Anyway.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that to me, you can make a note of that. You can say, oh, wow, that guy is very important, and this is proof, right?
Yeah, J.J. Watt, interestingly enough, got three most valuable player votes, but none for defensive player of the year.
It was like the times when Steve Nash would miss a game, and the Suns' offense couldn't do any. They couldn't even run up the court. Yeah. They were falling down.
Had to rely on
24-second violations every time.
Another turnover by Smush Parker.
That's right. Exactly.
Defensive player of the year. The winner was Buda Baker. Don't have a problem with that.
No.
But
love that guy.
A lot of different Cardinals got votes there. Jordan Hicks got a couple of votes, a handful of votes. Chandler Jones, Jalen Thompson, Marcus Golden, Isaiah Simmons, all got votes in that category. This is an interesting exercise this year, specifically for the Cardinals, because I think on both sides of the ball. And even considering the most valuable player, outside of Kyler, there wasn't anybody who had a tremendous individual season.
I agree with that.
Outside of James Conner and the touch, I mean, his yards per carry were not high. And
not the greatest.
The output wasn't great.
Not the greatest, but the red zone performance was spectacular, and some of the plays he made in the passing game were wholly unanticipated, to the point where Steelers fans were like, we've never seen that guy. Why'd we let that guy get away? So, yeah, so to me, I think that I read that story, and I understand why teams do this, and I like the way that the Cardinals did that by, you know, sampling a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah.
I think Rob Fredrickson's involved in that. To me, though, there's just nothing to celebrate about that football team. And maybe over the course of time I'll change my mind about that, but it just – everything about that football team just leaves a sour taste in my mouth right now because of consecutive collapses on the biggest stages. That can leave a mark in a fan base. And I know I'm not being hyperbolic, and I know I'm not alone. I know a lot of people, because that's exactly the kind of team that can turn you off. The team that teases you, gets to a point, and can never close the deal, can never win the big game. And that's where we're at. And so I have a hard time. I'll celebrate James Conner because what he did was spectacular. What he brought to the team was spectacular. I'm not in the mood to celebrate Kyler Murray right now.
That's fair. I think that's totally fair. The play of the year, by the way, with 11 votes of the panel, Jonathan Ward, his catch on the fake punt against Dallas.
That was fabulous.
Which was just a ridiculous catch. I would not have voted for that, though. You know what I would have voted for?
I'm trying to think. What would have been better than that?
Some of the other plays that got mentioned. Eno Benjamin trucking a defensive back in San Francisco.
And getting the Angry Runs Award.
Yes. Rondale Moore, 77-yard catch versus Minnesota.
That was crazy good.
Any of the James Conner, great one-hand.
Kyler's scramble throw versus Tennessee. My vote would be James Conner's one-handed catch against Chicago. He came out of the backfield, and the throw was behind him, and he adjusted and snagged it with his left hand behind
pirouetted
and ran and made it look like it was the easiest thing he's ever done.
Yeah,
like,
there was a couple of scramble completions from Kyler Murray that were pretty spectacular.
Was that the one you mentioned where he scrambled, and then he stepped back?
Yeah.
And, like, the defender, like, fell over, and then he completed, because that to me was... That was the almost the peak of his season, where the national media finally was like, this guy is unbelievable, this guy is special, the Cardinals are special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what Wolf's vote for player of the year was? This is interesting. Oh, he's the only one that voted for it, and he didn't view it as a positive. The most pivotal play of the year, he's got the Kyler Murray, A.J. Green miscommunication in the end zone against Green Bay.
Mm.
Whole season changed that night.
Mm.
I think that's an astute point by Wolf. Yep. There's the punctuation.
Anything else, Jared? Jared, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a man who set a Guinness World Record by balancing 85 spoons on his body. I thought of you. Because that guy would be really good at a buffet.
That guy would be ready for all types
all
of
soups.
Soup stirring.
All sorts of soups.
Or a pudding or an ice cream.
Boy, the mind really goes to town on where he was balancing those spoons on his entire body.
Hey now! Coming up next, Championship Weekend is here. We'll preview both the AFC and NFC Championship games. Next, it's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Marotta, presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
If I had the answer for why Joe Burrow's good at what he does, then I don't know. I'd sell that bottle up and sell it, but he's just special. That allows us to continue to call things the way we call, because even after a sack or a negative play, you still feel like we're always going to get it back. With the weapons that we got, Joe's ability to put a hit behind him and move on to the next play and find one of his freak shows, as he likes to call them, makes our job a lot easier as play callers.
That is Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, talking about his own quarterback, Joe Burrow, who in his first trip to the playoffs has Cincinnati one game away from the Super Bowl for the first time since 1989.
Yeah.
You remember that team, Bick? Boomer Esiason, Stanford Jennings, Tim Crumry.
You certainly remember.
Icky Woods. That was my
Chris Collinsworth?
That was my senior year of high school.
Chris Collinsworth was back on the Ken Anderson era.
was Colin, he might have still been there.
Really? Okay.
He didn't have a huge, long career.
I don't remember, yeah.
I got to look this up.
I said this earlier in the week, but it's really lost in history that the Bengals were sort of one of the top franchises of the 80s.
For a minute, yeah.
They weren't,
I mean,
really.
They were in two Super Bowls.
At the beginning and the end, but in between they weren't great.
Yeah, that Vinny's right about that. But what is interesting is that
Collinsworth was on that team. But I don't think he played in the Super Bowl.
If you got a 49ers Bengals Super Bowl,
he did play in the Super Bowl, that second one, sorry.
That would make a trilogy out of San Francisco. Now I don't think
that would be only the second time that's happened, correct?
Steelers-Cowboys?
Steelers-Cowboys have met three times.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Twice in the 70s, once in the 90s.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know if anybody wants to see that, but I will say this. Earlier in the week, there was a report of what Cincinnati is doing to prepare for the sound at Arrowhead. They were indoors practicing, and they were piping in so much crowd noise that outside the building, people had to cover their ears. That must have been the most torturous practice to go through. Which is interesting.
Yes.
Because we know the backdrop here. We know what Lawrence Tynes chimed in and said about Joe Burrow. We know what Joe Burrow said about the SEC crowds being way louder. Keyshawn Johnson brought up a good point this morning. The difference between, even though the SEC, the crowds might be louder and certainly bigger in certain places, Knoxville, you name it, Tuscaloosa, the NFL crowds are drunker. They're meaner.
I don't think so.
You don't?
Not in the SEC.
That is true.
You went to that game at Baton Rouge?
And that was an afternoon game, too.
Yeah, normally they play under the lights in Baton Rouge. They've been drinking since 9 in the morning.
Okay.
I guarantee.
All right. Well, that was Keyshawn Johnson's point.
I mean, look.
That there's a level of energy to an NFL crowd that's different because of the drunkenness.
And there's more. I think there's more families in college football
that
go to games and stuff, especially in cities like Baton Rouge.
But here's something to consider, too.
Right, and there's a lot. There's also the student body, and none of them drink. We know that. They're young kids.
I don't know how they would.
They're under 21.
That's right.
They all have proper identification.
Of course they do.
When we see fights break out at football games, it is almost always NFL
That's a good
games.
Point. That's a good point. You don't see a lot of people throwing down in college stadiums.
Yeah, weird. I didn't even think of
that.
Yeah,
that's a good. Sarah's
that's
on
a great
fire
point,
today.
Sarah.
Yeah, Thank that's you. A really good point.
Man, she hasn't chimed in much, but when she has, gold. Yeah, gold, today. Sarah. Right. Gold. something to consider on that on that front, though. That's the first game. That's the 3 o'clock Eastern game?
Yeah.
So
1 o'clock here.
Not as much pregame drinking time. It's going to be loud. There's no doubt about it. That's
it's
one of the
Kansas
things to look.
Kansas City. They will be hammered by 10 a.m.
They're in the
Vinny.
Parking lot right now.
Yes, they might be.
Listen, I got to call in sick. There's a game on Sunday.
That facility, for people who don't know, it is just monstrous. It's like 9 miles of cement, and there's Arrowhead Stadium and there's Kauffman Stadium, if it's still called that. The Royals Baseball Stadium and the Chiefs Football Stadium share a gigantic parking lot.
Yes. But that is the first game, and the noise is one of the big stories going in because of Joe Burrow's comments. I think it's going to be a little bit more juiced than it normally would be.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you add in the fact that the Chiefs are a game away from the Super Bowl themselves, after they failed in the Super Bowl last year. But I am so, so curious to see again, the unflappable Joe Burrow. Locally, when Kyler Murray was going into his first playoff game, we all expected elevation. Would he be bigger than the moment? We all thought, yes, he was not bigger than the moment in his first playoff offering. Joe Burrow has looked very comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And when you consider the fact that he got sacked 9 times in a divisional playoff game against Tennessee and still not only, guided his team to a win, but did it through the air.
Yeah.
He put up huge numbers despite immense pressure from Tennessee.
Yes.
This guy is different.
What people were saying out of that organization, the holy bleep moment was the fact that after 9 sacks, his eyes were still peeled downfield. He was not looking around him for the rush, which is unbelievable for a young guy in that situation, especially one who came off knee surgery the previous year. That tells you something about Joe Burrow. That tells you how strong he is between the ears. which tells you that, or would seem to tell you, they might have a chance in this game against Kansas City. Mm-hmm. There's a belief now that Kansas City's back to being unbeatable based on what they've done.
But the one team that's beaten them since October.
Yeah, how about that?
Is the Cincinnati Bengals.
How about that?
It does feel, though, that this is the, okay, this is the year Joe Burrow loses this game and the Bengals lose this game to the Chiefs. And then next year
maybe
is the year they pass them.
Maybe. Yeah,
if you go by like the
I think if the NFL
steps.
Had its druthers, they'd want a Rams-Chiefs Super Bowl. That's what they'd want. You don't agree with that?
I think they want the Chiefs. I don't think the other team matters. Cause...
What? You don't?
Well, because
first
not
of all,
the
don't
Buccaneers.
You? I think the
well, then again, Jimmy
Packers.
Garoppolo is really a handsome guy, so you do have to.
Right,
have to
and imagine him on the
freaking gorgeous
on big screen TVs
under those lights.
The,
are you kidding?
Well, first of all, the 49ers have a much bigger fan base than the Rams do.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Matthew Stafford, quality of quarterback, quality of offense.
I know. Okay,
and LA and a home game.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking.
If you're talking
about
the actual game,
the star power of it all. It's.
I don't think Stafford has. I mean. If Patrick Mahomes is in the game, that's the star of the game.
Yeah, I would agree with Jerry. The NFL is secretly crossing its fingers for Kansas City.
The NFL is killing themselves that neither the Packers and Rodgers nor Brady and neither they thought for sure probably one of them would make it this far.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be interesting because I do remember vividly. You remember when the Cardinals played the Vikings in the Metrodome and Vince Tobin famously did not want to practice with imported crowd noise?
How'd that work out?
Oops.
They only lost by 20. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, big stories of the day packaged nicely in the Rush Hour reboot by Sarah Cazell. That's straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
All right, welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everyone, on this Football Friday. We're still calling it a Football Friday.
We are.
Sure.
Here on Bickley and Murata Mornings.
I think we should do that every Friday.
Every
of the
day is
year.
A football Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can make
at least
that
two
work.
More weeks.
We can
I think in the middle of July.
Every day. Every single day.
Every day is football
Jarrett,
Friday.
Every day is football Until Friday.
Isn't that a Morrissey Shea. Song?
Right.
Every day is football Friday.
We are Bickley and Murata Mornings. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey!
Hey, Vince Murata. Silent Wave, Priyuge, and Jarrett Carlin.
What does a sassy horse eat?
Hey! It's pretty good.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Do you know who's got the world's best dad jokes? Our guy, Cheese Doodle Dad.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think so? I think he uncorked some really funny ones.
I think he's about a 600 hitter.
I haven't noticed.
600 hitter. Is that good in comedy? I don't know. All right, continue.
That's still Hall of Fame, I think. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. During the Rush Hour reboot, we take you through the top stories of the day. We do it every day at 7:30. So let's get into it.
All love Cheese Doodle.
Oh, of course.
I laugh hard at some of them.
Yeah. At some of them. Let's start with the NBA. The starters for the NBA All-Star Game were revealed yesterday. No starters for the Suns.
What?
I know. For the West, it's going to be Steph Curry, Ja Morant, LeBron James, Andrew Wiggins, and Nikola Jokic. So now, as far as Devin Booker and Chris Paul go, we wait for the reserves to be announced. That will be on February 3rd to see if one of them, both of them, neither of them are named reserves. So Dan and Vince, I know that you mentioned earlier in the show you're not thrilled but also not surprised that neither Devin Booker nor Chris Paul were named a starter. So how would you change the selection process for the All-Star Game, specifically for the starters, since it's currently 50% fan vote, 25% media vote, 25% current player vote? How would you guys make it a more fair and equitable process so that the appropriate starters are in place?
You know how I feel about media making decisions like this, but the media vote with the players vote, they're pretty close to each other, and I think they're also very reflective of the way it should be. Something like that, maybe just letting the players decide. But to me, they're just I just think that there has to be There has to be something better than this, because these all-star berths, that they get folded into players' personal narratives, and they get held against players. Devin Booker's never started an all-star game. Well, yeah, but that's because, you know, you've got K-pop stars voting for Andrew Wiggins and 15 million Instagram followers. Yeah, whatever. It's just, to me, it's an either-or thing. Either you take it seriously or you don't.
Well, I, for one, have been clamoring to see Andrew Wiggins in an all-star game, so I'm thrilled. I know the entire basketball world is thrilled along with me. No, yes. I would, you got to shrink the importance of the fan vote. It would be a mistake for the NBA just to say, thanks, fans, but no thanks.
Sure.
You don't have a vote. It has to be in the fold. But it's gotten more popular and more out of control, I think, too, with, you know, the hashtags and the social media influence, and everything's juiceable.
Yeah.
You know, the player vote, the coach vote, the media vote, not really juiceable. So I would shrink the influence that the fans have.
Maybe make that 25% and then
maybe
50% player. Oh, 5%.
Look, we hear you.
Yeah.
You're just not as loud as you used to be.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Let's move on to the Arizona Coyotes. Craig Morgan, who has covered the Yotes for a long, long time, he reported yesterday that the Coyotes and ASU could partner up to give the Yotes a temporary home. He pointed to ASU's multi-purpose arena, which is under construction right now, scheduled to be done later this year, could house the Coyotes for the next 3 or 4 years, depending on how long it takes the Coyotes to find or, more realistically, build their new permanent home. 5,000 seats in this multi-purpose arena, and on top of that, the Coyotes would have to financially invest in some additions to the building that mm-hmm. would kind of keep it all separate and kosher with the NCAA. So what do you guys think about this potential plan? Is it realistic?
We have to think it's realistic yeah. now, because there's not really anything in terms of other realistic options. So,
yeah.
And it looks like just the fact that there's been an announcement and a statement made by both sides that this might be further down the road than we realize from mm-hmm. the outside.
Right.
I mean, what it looks like when the season rolls around, an NHL game in an arena that small, if it's temporary, it all depends, Sarah, on what happens with the vote and the land in Tempe for mm-hmm. a permanent new home.
Yeah.
And around New Year's, I think it was a Rush Hour Reboot question or a social studies question. You asked, what would you want for the new year for all the teams? And I said, for the Coyotes, permanence. For them, for their fans,
yeah.
For the league. Gary Bettman's been steadfast in his support of this franchise, but he's got to be sick of it by now.
You would think so. But also, you'd be more prone, if you've stuck it out this long, you're going to be more prone to, okay, we'll give them this last shot, especially if they end up without what's on that blueprint that they sent over to us.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the win in this is that at the very least, the Coyotes have a partner saying, yes, we will open our doors to you if you can make this happen.
Yeah.
So it's in, they haven't had that in quite some time.
That's true.
Yeah. And there'll be a fresh energy there. There'll be a newness to that rink. It looks very bright. It looks very, I think it's going to be something that's, you know. Besides making Bobby Hurley very jealous, he didn't like that question very much.
I don't think he did.
or no. Maybe he did like it, because he, yeah, it, that that's
yeah.
Gotta,
maybe he acted like he didn't like it, but deep down was like, yeah.
I'm glad. So he's probably like, glad somebody's finally saying something about
where's
this.
My arena,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
Where's my arena? So there's at least that. So I think that if the Coyotes can get this referendum done, and if they can get a shovel in the ground and make this happen, this is going to work. If they don't get this referendum done in a very short order, I think they're gone. I think they're out of town, off to Houston, goodbye. That's what I believe.
Wow. Okay. Let's go to the NFL now. It seemed for a while now like it was going to be a foregone conclusion that Vance Joseph would be the next head coach of the Miami Dolphins. He was favored by a lot of the sports books to be the hire. But he is not one of the candidates, at least not according to Ian Rappaport, that is getting a second interview with the Miami Dolphins. It's 3 OCs who are getting second interviews, which we have sensed a trend in all of the other NFL hires this cycle. right now, it doesn't look like Vance Joseph is tied to any other potential jobs. So would you celebrate the return of Vance Joseph as DC for the Cardinals if he's indeed back for another year?
I don't have a problem. I know there's a lot of Cardinals fans, and I've seen them on social media saying, please, 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 Dolphins, hire Vance Joseph.
No,
I
really?
Don't think Vance Joseph.
Yes,
yeah,
I've seen a lot
of it.
That, yeah.
I don't think Vance Joseph is the issue. I think he dealt with some issues. I brought this up to you, Bick, too, on why I think the Cardinals defense struggled down the stretch. Is because the great start their cornerbacks had at the beginning of the year, Steve Keim felt good about that group, and then it got thin, and then they
and then
didn't,
it became
they,
Breon Borders.
They
and
didn't
then,
play
yeah,
as well,
right,
so he didn't right. go out and get any help at that position, and I think you know the start was kind of a false security blanket, but mm-hmm. that's not Vance Joseph's fault.
I think that's a really good point you just made there. I think there was a false sense of security about how tight they were on the back end, and it kind of fell apart on them.
Yeah.
Robert Alford, that losing him made a significant difference.
It did. No doubt about it.
Okay, so if we see Vance Joseph back next year, good news for the Cardinals.
I think so. I definitely think so, yes.
Continuity is not a bad thing, especially when we're talking about an 11-win team. If he were to get a job, I would, you know, I'd be happy for him if that's what he wants. But I don't think it's a bad thing if he's back, no.
Okay. Let's go back to the NBA for our final question. I don't know if you guys saw the news this morning, or I think maybe it was even last night. Draymond Green is joining TNT as a consistent contributor to Inside the NBA while still being a current active player. So which current Arizona athlete would you most love to see on a national media platform during their playing days, getting their insight while a current player?
Ooh. Current player on a... I didn't see this question coming. Came out of nowhere. Like a bat out of hell.
Okay, Meatloaf.
I like it.
Chris Paul is always interesting, mm-hmm. and his experience and his thoughts on the game are usually pretty interesting. That's the first one that popped into my head.
Maybe. He'd be, he'd be very interesting because he does communicate very well.
Yes. Anybody from the Cardinals?
Yeah, any sport in the Valley.
Chandler Jones is always kind of dryly funny.
J.J. Watt's pretty dynamic.
J.J. Watt is, J.J. Watt's great.
Yeah.
It's a good answer.
Yeah, I'll go with those.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
You're good.
I mean, we'd much rather have them concentrate on their jobs.
Of course. I think it will be interesting to see how Draymond juggles that. And Steve Kerr has already said when he walks into the Warriors facility, he is a player. He is not an analyst.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more fights on the set of TNT. We can count on that.
No question.
Thank you, Sarah. That's
Thank
the Rush
you.
Hour reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, we'll talk Cardinals football. We'll talk NFL with their play-by-play voice and ESPN broadcaster Dave Pasch next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Marotta. Presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Friday edition of Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Headed into championship weekend in the NFL, both the AFC and NFC. Joining us now to talk about that and really whatever else we want to talk about because he covers a lot of ground. Play-by-play voice of the Cardinals, also ESPN broadcaster, does work for Westwood One. Dave Pasch, our guest here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. And a podcaster, too, the Dave Pasch Podcast. You got a lot of stuff going on, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, guys. Yeah, probably too much. Probably too much stuff going on, but it's all good.
Well, adding the Westwood One radio calls to what you do, I've always wondered this, because you do so much radio and so much a television play-by-play, and they're different. They're very different. What do you have a preference on what you like better?
Well, look, it's the Westwood has just been this year, and it's really just a handful of games, and I had mixed emotions doing that game. Obviously you're trying to be a pro and get excited when the Rams
right.
get that long pass to Cooper Kupp and they win the game. But at the same time, you're like, boy, this could be the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of felt like Tampa Bay was, I just didn't think that, I thought the Rams were going to win that game and I wasn't really surprised what happened. So I don't know. I was kind of going through that game you know, thinking like, man, the Cardinals, they could have been in this position.
And they could have been hosting the NFC Championship game this Sunday if things would have gone a little better. Here's what I want to ask you, because you've got great acumen and insight and all that stuff. There are not a lot of answers coming forth from the Arizona Cardinals. There's a lot of people wondering, how can this kind of collapse happen 2 years in a row? How could Kyler Murray be so self-confident then look the way he did against the Rams? Where do we go with all of this? From your eyes and your experience, what needs to change with the Cardinals?
Well, it's a great question. I do think it starts with Kyler. He's now been in the league for 3 years, so we can't use the excuse of, well, you know, he's got potential and he's showing signs. I mean, he is showing signs. He had great stretches this year and he is 24, but you've got other quarterbacks that are in the same situation that he's in or a little bit younger, like Joe Burrow, who are leading their teams deeper into the playoffs and having more team success. And ultimately your team reflects your quarterback. And 4-7 this year and 2-5 or whatever it was at the end of last year, that's not a good reflection on your quarterback. Now, it's unfair to just say it's him, but, I mean, the quarterback is the face of your franchise, and we've seen glimpses of what Kyler can do. I think it's a lot of things, guys. I think mainly it's just the continuing to understand the process of what it takes to be a great player. Loving the game for what the game is, understanding that there's a certain amount of prep work that has to go into each game. You have to know what you're seeing. When teams adjust, you have to be able to match that. And I thought he was doing that during their 7-game win streak. When things started to go downhill and he didn't, you know, if he doesn't start a game well, it feels like he doesn't finish the game well. If he does start well, it feels like he carries that out the entire game. And I'm not sure why that is. I'm sure I'm not the only one wondering that. And I think we can look at a lot of other people and say, well, this guy didn't do his job, and the play calling's got to be better, or the defense has to be better. Why can't they stop the run? All those things are certainly legitimate questions, but it starts and stops with your franchise quarterback. And we've seen he's good enough to take the Cardinals to the ultimate prize. It's just, why isn't in the second half of the season, why is he not playing well?
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer.
Dave Pascher, our guest here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Kyler aside, and I think you bring up some great points there in what we saw unfold with Kyler Murray this year. But, you know, after that pass that was intercepted by Rasul Douglas in the end zone at the end of the Thursday night Green Bay game, the Cardinals looked like a different team. It wasn't all Kyler. Is there anything else you point to in your diagnosis of where it turned south? I mean, you could look at, obviously, DeAndre Hopkins. His absence completely changed the offense. I brought up to Bick earlier today the decreased production and play of the cornerback position. I mean, what do you look at in those areas, Dave?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at now 17 games, right, when you're a team that has – you know, every team has flaws, but when you're a team that, you know, has some young players at certain positions, you've got a better chance that their flaws are going to get exposed at some point, maybe for a significant period of time. And you talked about the young cornerbacks. You know, Byron Murphy got off to a great start, didn't play as well at the end of the year. You know, Rondale Moore, for whatever reason, wasn't as productive.
Yep.
But clearly when DeAndre Hopkins went out, the first time you saw it, they still were able to overcome it, you know, winning two road games with Colt McCoy. And, you know, I just think for whatever reason, it was just easier on Kyler Murray. He knew what to expect on that left side of the offense. He knew what kind of coverage he was going to get from DeAndre Hopkins. It was the ultimate security blanket. But I also think, you know, from a physicality standpoint, you know, just watching these playoff games, there's a level of physicality the Cardinals showed at times. You know, that San Francisco game at State Farm Stadium, when the Cardinals won that game, Isaiah Simmons, that was the most memorable play of the season to me. That hit on the goal line on Trey Lance. I mean, that was like, man, where's that for 17 games? Why is that not there? And that's, I think, to get to the Super Bowl, and the Cardinals made some strides in that department with some of their offseason acquisitions, Rodney Hudson, James Conner. They need to continue to grow in that area, though, being more physical.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Last Cardinal-related question. I agree with everything you're saying here because that level of physicality you're seeing right now, it jumps off the screen at you from these teams that are still they're everybody to a man is putting everything they have on that football field to advance. Okay, last thing, when it comes to Kyler Murray, people have noted that there's a big difference between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and that would be the amount of personal relationships they have, that Tom Brady makes it a point to invest emotionally in everybody on the football team, certainly everybody on offense. Aaron Rodgers isn't the same dude, and that level of leadership can maybe show up on a football field and maybe explain why one guy is so good in clutch situations while the other might have trust issues. How much work do you think Kyler Murray has to do in that regard to become that kind of guy to inspire people?
That's definitely part of it. You know, I think he has grown a lot. You know, you look at this year going out and getting, you know, the set of golf clubs for every single offensive lineman with their names on the bags, you know, spending more time with those guys, being better with the TV crews when they come in to do interviews. I mean, he did really grow in those areas. So there are some positives there. It's just, I think when things go south, when there's adversity, he's got to handle that better. He doesn't like to lose. And I think, you know, no one wants to lose, but you've got to, the body language, you know, hanging your head, getting down on yourself, you can't do that. And you know, Carson Palmer, one of his greatest strengths was, first of all, his toughness. And you know, Adrian Wilson told me the same thing about Kurt Warner when I had Adrian on that podcast about how tough those guys were. You know, when you get hit hard, when you make a mistake, you don't show it. You don't let them see you sweat. That's the next step for Kyler. It's not, because when you get up after getting hit in the face, or you throw a pick six and you come right back the next drive and leave your team down to a touchdown, like Carson did, like Kurt did, there's a belief that begins to form in that quarterback from the other guys. And that's not there yet. There are times when it's there.
Yep.
But it's not there to the point where, obviously, it's going to carry you through a season.
Yep. Dave Pasch, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Before we let you go, you've seen a lot of San Francisco. You've seen a lot of the Rams. I think the Rams on paper are the overwhelming favorite. But the 49ers, they played football on paper. The 49ers wouldn't be here. Who do you like in that game on Sunday, Dave?
I think the Rams are going to win. At some point, you know, the Niners have won six in a row. I mean, at some point, this has got to change. I just think Matthew Stafford's playing so well right now. I don't trust Jimmy G to, you know, I didn't trust him last week, and they found a way to win. You know, Kyle Shanahan's so good, the game plan, the way they get Debo Samuel involved, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
but
really
I think the Rams are the better team, and I think they win.
Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah. All right, guys.
See you, Dave. Dave Pasch, Cardinals play-by-play announcer, ESPN broadcaster, the Dave Pasch Podcast. He joined us on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Get your price at 72sold.com. Halfway through on this Football Friday, Bick will kick off the second half of the show, as only he can. The Bickley Blast is next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.